the ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
It was billed as the weekend of the year, and I don't think it disappointed. Alongside Kirk Herbstreit, I'm Matt Barry, a Monday tradition unlike any other, the ESPN College Football Podcast. Kirk, look, we came into the weekend excited. We woke up Sunday excited. Here we are on Monday. What are our feelings now?
Oh, my gosh. I agree. I think it was, up to this point, 5 weeks in, you're right. It wasn't, I mean, the game in South Bend with Cincinnati and Notre Dame, the game in Athens with Arkansas traveling, they were an upstart new program. Look out, what's Sam Pittman doing? They got proved, they were taught a lesson, I guess, and reminded about how good Georgia is. And then we had the game in Tuscaloosa. But beyond those three, I don't know if we're going to have another week where you just had the depth. I mean, you had 12 to 15 games going into the weekend that were intriguing, and then they lived up to it. And so we just continue to learn things. I think the highlight for me was I wanted to see what Lane Kiffin and Matt Corral could do against Alabama, knowing that Pete Golding and Nick Saban were humiliated the year before when they gave up over 600 yards of offense to that offense. And you knew they were going to simplify and come up with a new plan, which worked clearly. And I think that stood out to me. Cincinnati up 17-0, you know, early in that game. Then they end up holding on, and Ritter makes a play late to secure victory. The way that defense played, they needed that win, obviously, to throw a group of fives hat into the ring, potentially into a playoff where it's an open year for their potential to get in there. And then just Georgia flexing its muscles about how good they really are this year. You could make a really, I think, a strong case that they're the top team in the country.
Oh, yeah.
I think if they figure out, you know, the quarterback situation, that's the one thing that to me is kind of holding them back a little bit. They haven't had to win a game with the quarterback, but at some point they will. And where is JT Daniels in this whole thing with that lat injury? It seems like it's literally a day-to-day thing. Mm-hmm. Will that go on all the way to Atlanta in the SEC championship, that kind of injury? Or will they give him 2 weeks or 3 weeks, just you're off, just go rest? Like Dak Prescott, by the way, same injury, different grade. I think mm-hmm. Dak is a little more serious, but same injury. And the only way Dak got over it was he didn't get to throw. He sat out, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks. And you wonder if JT Daniels might be headed down that path. But yeah, man, a lot of those are the three headlines to me in the results.
And within those headlines, you know, we hype these things because they're so good going in. Georgia, Arkansas is such a compelling storyline. Alabama, Ole Miss with Lane and Nick is such a compelling storyline. And Matt Corral. And then the group of five was hanging their banner on Cincinnati. And the one thing that stood out to me with all these, Herb, is that the better team 10 minutes into the game was the better team. Every single one of these games, Alabama, Georgia, and Cincinnati, by the end of the first quarter, it's like, oh, okay, the better team came out to play and executed early. And it really gave us zero drama. I mean, Notre Dame kind of came on late. Drew Pine, touchdown, 17-13, missed the extra point. And then Cincinnati drives right back down with Desmond Ritter, and they answer. But I think for me, anytime you get into a weekend where there's matchups of some of the best teams in the country, I'm always intrigued by the one and the two that come out early on and say, you know what, you guys are cute and this is fun, but we're better and we're going to show you right away.
Yeah, that's a great point, and you're right. I mean, it was there was not a lot of drama. Unfortunately, when you're calling a game like that, it's frustrating because you want that drama. But Georgia just out of the gate, and Arkansas kind of self-destructing to help them. I mean, Georgia takes the ball. They go right down the field, touchdown. Crowd is in a frenzy. And Arkansas takes the field for the first time. A couple of false starts to start the game. And they're first and 20. That, to me, set the tone, as you're saying, for the entire afternoon of Georgia dominance. Be interesting to see what Arkansas does on the back end now with both of them and Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss having frustrating, embarrassing weekends. Someone's going to get over it, and someone's going to continue – you know, to spiral, you know, 2 weeks in a row of frustration because they happen to be playing one another. But I just am so impressed with Georgia and their defense. And even their offense with Todd Monken, even though he's got that quarterback situation, doing a hell of a job with the physicality to line of scrimmage. It's a throwback offense. I mean, they're going to run. They're going to beat your brains in up front, mm-hmm. and they're going to play action. You know, they've been hurt at receiver. They're hurt at quarterback. And where they're strong is offensive line and running back. So between that, complimentary football, great defense, great special teams, they're a tough out. We know that. Alabama, I think people, because of the Florida game a few weeks ago, I felt others felt, uh-oh, they're vulnerable.
Right, they're vulnerable.
That was kind of like a narrative that I felt that it's been building. I didn't feel that, but I think fans maybe and other analysts felt that, and I think it was more of Florida played pretty well that day, mm-hmm. and I think Alabama went to work on how they needed to get better against Lane Kiffin's system, and they came up with a heck of a plan. Pete Golding, the defense coordinator, deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think with Cincinnati and Notre Dame, I think people underestimate the amount of pressure that's on a group of five team that has expectations to not just win. I think these players, what Luke Fickell's trying to guard against is, hey guys, just play. Like,
yeah,
don't feel like you need to send a message. And I felt like when they played Indiana, they were trying to send a message. And mm-hmm. I felt like they were trying to play at a different level. And it backfired on them. And I thought for the most part in this game, they just played football. You know, they just threw the ball out there and just played. And their defense, for the most part, was able to, they created three turnovers. They played really well most of the game. And that's who they are. I mean, if you watched the Sugar Bowl last year against Georgia, and by the way, most of these guys returned from that team, that they were physical and athletic. And man, you walked away from there thinking, man, that's a good team. And I, by the way, that's why they were preseason top 10 this year.
Yep.
If they got blown out by Georgia, they would be an afterthought in 2021. Mm-hmm. But because of the way they played in that game, it gave them some momentum into 21. And now that's why they are where they are. And the Pac-12, which we'll talk about in a second, has had some tough losses. Oregon went down this past weekend. The ACC we've talked about has had, you know, some tough losses with Carolina and Clemson. If there's ever a year where a group of five could potentially, if they keep winning, you know, we keep saying that Georgia and Alabama, if they meet undefeated, there's a good chance they both could be in. We'll see what happens in the Big Ten. The Big Ten said, hey, what about us? We want maybe two teams in there. So Cincinnati could be fighting a Big 12 champ to get in there, or possibly, you know, maybe a Pac-12 team runs the table and they got one loss. There's still a long way to go, but they mm-hmm. definitely helped their cause by playing the way they did. And now they got to run the table in the American and try to be undefeated at the end, see if they've done enough.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, and coaches say control the controllables. Cincinnati did that. They could control going into South Bend, completely different team that showed up against Indiana, to your point, because they did press. I think the atmosphere at Indiana was more hostile than it was at Notre Dame. And it was a completely different team. It was like, hey, we're just going to come out and do us. We've proven that we can go in and beat a Big Ten team, not the same Indiana team as a year ago, but we can do and play football with anybody. And they were almost at peace with their situation. But the one thing that with Cincinnati, again, you can't control your schedule. You can't control that UCF is down. They don't have Dillon Gabriel. You can't control that some Memphis is down, some of these other schools. That's probably Cincinnati's biggest hurdle now, is when I look at their schedule, to me, bro, they've got one game left and it's SMU.
Bro, you're exactly right. I mean, you look at their schedule.
It's brutal.
I looked at that this morning. You know, they've got Temple, who just is coming off a big win over Memphis. They're sitting there at 3-2. You know, not terrible. But other than that, UCF, who's down this year, they're 2-2. Then they go Navy, Tulsa, and UCF. I mean, mm-hmm. three in a row that I think collectively have three wins. So
yeah,
it's not good in that regard, obviously. You and I like to bounce around these conferences.
Yep.
And I know we normally start with Big Ten, SEC, Big 12. But you know what? I want to start in the Pac-12, because the Pac-12, I thought a lot of times, and I know you're an Arizona State guy, But UCLA's gotten some attention this year. Oregon's gotten a lot of attention after their win against Ohio State this year. But other than that, it's been a lot of, oh, gosh, you know, Washington's not very good. USC's not very good. Arizona State's kind of a forgotten team. Nobody really talks ever about Arizona State. But I said on game day that you had two matchups that I thought were intriguing because you had Stanford and Oregon. And I felt the winner of that game, despite where we are right now in the current standings, but the winner of that game is going to be in the driver's seat to get to the Pac-12 championship. So there's a lot on the line for the first week in October in that game. And then in the other game, Arizona State and UCLA, while Chip Kelly and UCLA, they've been the media darlings for the first month of the season. Arizona State had a chance against UCLA, and I felt that the winner of that game will be in the driver's seat of the Pac-12 South. So it was ironic that we're looking at these two big games, and the winner of those games, there's a chance they're going to end up meeting in a Pac-12 championship. And sure enough, we had two great games. Stanford ends up finding a way in overtime to get it done. And here comes Arizona State. Big win. I mean, they make a statement, 42-23 over UCLA. And now you look at those Pac-12 South standings, Utah is still trying to kind of put it together. Arizona State's out in front, 2-0 in conference play, and they lose to BYU. And I think that's why part of why people put them on the back burner. But right now in conference play, they look great, and you got to feel good about Jaden Daniels and the way they're running the football.
Yeah, you look at it, the Sun Devils, we can start there because they preseason, everybody talked about it more locally and on that side of the country, how this team was loaded. And they are. You can use that term loaded. They've got their whole secondary back, probably the best secondary in the league and one of the best secondaries in the country. Man, linebackers, Merlin Robinson's great. They've had some issues up front with injuries. But then their running backs between Trainum, Rashad White, they've got the quarterback, Jaden Daniels, their whole offensive line is back. And so this really was a team you could ID and say, hey, you know what? If they get and play the way that they should, they could be a one-loss team in the Pac-12 championship playing for a Rose Bowl and maybe something bigger. And we just hadn't seen it. And so early on, Pac-12 specifically, what happened? Oregon goes to Columbus and wins. All of a sudden, Oregon, Pac-12, they've got their team. We've ID'd their team. ASU that same week, I think it was the weekend after, loses to BYU. Well, there goes the Arizona State story. Yet no one's talking about like Ohio State with Arizona State that it's an out-of-conference game. Everything's still in front of you, to be cliche.
Yeah.
So now it's flipped. Now it's flipped. Oregon loses. Can they still be a one-loss team? I think they've got the talent, although they're banged up. CJ Verdell goes down. What are they going to be without him? Arizona State's found their rhythm a little bit. And then you point to Oregon State might be the second, third best team in the league. Mm-hmm. And so it's because we don't have brands. You and I were talking about before this podcast, whether I like to admit it or not, it's a USC conference, period. Oregon doesn't want to hear that. No one else wants to hear that. When USC is down, the Pac-12 nationally, no one gives a damn. Be it right, wrong, or indifferent. But there's still good football out there. And we're going to learn a lot more about Arizona State Friday. They're on ESPN. They've got Stanford. Stanford's been different since Tanner McKee took over at quarterback. They were absolutely just lost in week one against Kansas State, but they're a tough out now. So
I think that, like I said, that could be a preview maybe of a Pac-12 championship. Yeah. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens. Both those teams are worthy. Tanner McGee's giving Stanford a lift. You know how anytime you have a good quarterback that's playing well, it affects everybody. It not only affects the offense, it affects the defense, it affects the coaching, the approach, the mindset, the confidence that you can play with. And I think Stanford, the way they played against Oregon, that there was an example of what I'm talking about. They just look like, you know, when you got a guy that's pulling the trigger, that's making good decisions and making plays, it's just like, hey, we're okay. When you're not good there, you're a little erratic there. Defense is like, oh God, we got to get stopped. We got to get stopped here. We don't want to get down by 10. We can't afford to get down by 10. We don't have the quarterback and the offense that can get us back. So, and when you don't have that, man, it's a freeing experience. And I think right now, Stanford, if you looked at them early versus how they're playing now, that's what they remind you of. And that's a heck of a showdown on a Friday night on ESPN with Stanford and Arizona State.
we get some good Friday games, don't we? Had good Friday games this week. Like we had BYU, Utah State was, you know, that's it, very hyper regional rivalry, but it's a fun game between those two, and BYU just keeps winning. And then you had Iowa, and I don't, you know, those people out there that like to look through the college football map and they're like, that's it. That's where the upset's going to happen. That's the trap game. You know how many people, everybody thought Iowa was going to go to Maryland and get got because they had a trap game coming up to Penn State. Iowa had their most complete performance of the year. I mean,
they scored 31 points in the second quarter. Now, I don't know how I felt bad for Tungabaloa. I mean, I don't know how many, was it five, seven turnovers? Yeah,
Leah had a tough game.
Five picks. I mean, and Iowa's defense, they are, I'm going to use this on game day. Iowa is the MMA fighter that like, okay, or Georgia and Alabama and some of these other teams, they get in the middle of the ring, MMA, boom, they have that knockout that's on all the highlights, right?
Right.
Then you got Iowa. Iowa's the guy that goes in the second round, both sides are bleeding. And then they get you in that inevitable like chokehold or whatever. And you're like, oh my God, I'm trying to hold on. Oh no, can't tap out. That's Iowa. That's the style of football. You can knock Iowa's style offensively. But Brian Ferentz, as the OC, the son of Kirk, he calls the game, and Iowa's been this for millions of years, calls the game based on how they play defense. They are trying to consume clock. Yep. They're playing smart. They're going to convert on third down. They're going to keep the ball away from you. They're not, they're like 100th in the nation in total offense. And that's exactly where they want to be. They don't care. And you might look at them if you're an SEC fan or Big 12, whatever, around the country and be like, man, Iowa, they're overrated. Until you get in the ring with them, you want no part of them. You know, so they got Penn State this week. They take care of business. If you make any mistake, Iowa capitalizes that with that defense. They give their own offense a short field. That's their recipe to win games. Great defense. Don't give up a big play. Win field position. Get the short field. Kick the field goal. Score the touchdown. Win the surest way. Old-fashioned football that, by the way, still works. And he's got a great team. Kirk Ferentz, great coach. And don't knock him just because they don't play a sexy brand of football. It's effective. And they proved it last Friday in the way they played against Maryland. And now they get the big stage, and we'll see how they play against Penn State, who's coming in on fire with Sean Clifford as far as confidence. So you couldn't have two better teams playing each other in an early matchup in October than the way Clifford and Penn State, after the year they had last year, where they lost their first five and just, it was just the season just got away from them in a COVID year. And they knew coming in, this is a new year, fresh start, new offensive coordinator, not this year. We're going to be different. And they have been. They're sitting there at 5-0, fourth in the nation, and playing great football.
Yeah, I forget what the stat was, or the year, but I know that Penn State's the last team, their first team since 1989 or something like that. I think it was Tennessee, to start the season 5-0 after starting 0-5 the previous year. So they've completely flipped the script. Mm-hmm. And here's how I describe Iowa. Iowa is that buddy that you and I inevitably had growing up that we tried to set up with a friend. We're like, no. They're not Brad Pitt, but they're fun. They've got a great personality. Like they're fun to be around. You'll enjoy them. They've got a good personality. Iowa doesn't do anything that you could be watching an Iowa game, Kirk, and it could be 10-7 going into the fourth quarter. They don't do anything that pops off the TV. They just do a lot of stuff really, really good.
Yep.
They just, they're not a supermodel. They're not a Picasso. They're a football team.
I'm telling you, that's fine. They're the MMA guy that chokes you out.
Yeah. That's it.
And they're not going to be on the promotional material.
No,
no one's going to be talking about, boy, have you seen Iowa? And I'm just telling you, you play them and you get, all of a sudden they take away your strength and you're like, wait a second. I've always liked to do this, right? I always like this. I have to be able to do this. This is what we do. And they're like, no, today you're not doing that. So you're going to have to figure out something else that you want to do, because that's eliminated. So now they force you to go to your other thing that you have to try to do that you're not quite as good at or not quite as confident in doing. Phil Parker, great defensive coordinator, and they just know their system. They play to it. And by the way, they have NFL players scattered throughout their roster. So it's not like the little engine that could.
Right.
They have players, man. They recruit to a certain guy. A lot of them are three stars or two stars. They put them in the weight room. They introduce them. Come on in here. Here's the weight room. You stay in here, get your protein shakes, put on the weight, learn your craft. All of a sudden, you're a redshirt sophomore, redshirt junior. Now you're a grown man. Now you come on into the lineup. Now you're in the two deep. Here we go. I mean, they're just grown men.
Stay there for a second. They have developed. There you go. When's the last time? Now you got me thinking about this. When's the last time? Because I'm going to go back to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was such a good point when you said Wisconsin sold out who they are for the four star in Graham Mertz.
Yeah.
Right. When's the last time you and I or anybody have talked about this can't miss five star prospect at Iowa?
Never.
You just don't. They find the guys in the corn, develop them, and then they allow them to play football. They don't do that there.
If I were a coach getting ready to go into this uncharted world of name, image, and likeness, I don't care who you are, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, whoever. I would study Kirk Ferentz's model because he's never worried about five-star. He's never worried about what – but now keep in mind, they find a fit. They find a guy. You know, I think they find – you know, all the recruits have in common? They all want to play football. They all like the grind. They like playing football. That may sound – elementary to you, or you may sound, well, of course they love football. No, they don't. Not in 2021. They love Instagram. They love the idea of being famous, but not all the players love football. At Iowa, they love football. Coach could say, practice 3 a.m. Players would be like, okay, yep, see you at 3. Like, it's not, what? No way. 3 a.m. Coach said 3. We'll be there. Like, and when you have that, they're not worried about what's in it for me. They're not worried about it. What about my brand? And I'm not saying those things, there isn't a place for that. I'm just saying that's not the driving force for them.
Right. And that's not who they are.
No, no, no. If they can get some of that on the back end, great. But they're not living there. You know, they're just driven by everybody shows up. They got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because they're under recruited or maybe underappreciated. You bring the entire crew together, and you get them all to buy into the same philosophy and the same system, and you develop them. Like I said, they go away, a lot of these guys, when they're young. They're stuck in the weight room. They're on the scout team. They're developing, and then they grow. And then they come out as their second, third, fourth year, and you got a great group of players. And they're fun to watch. Can't wait to see what happens with them in Penn State. That's a heck of a showdown.
Yeah, we'll move on from Iowa in a minute, but just to drive home your point, one of the recruiting services, 2020, their national rank, Kirk, was 35. The previous year, it was 41.
Hey, that's them right there.
They bested it at 24 the following year. And then listen to their Big Ten ranks 3 years in a row.
Let me guess. They're in that 7-8 range, 6-7-8 range probably every year.
Bingo. The three-year composite I'm looking at, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. No, that's them. And by the way, they're completely happy to be there. They don't want to go. They don't want to hover in that top five. They want no part of the top five.
No, they don't need the turnover corn. They just need to play football.
They don't mind. Just we'll be over here. You guys have to keep an eye. We're going to be over here in the corner over here with the weight room. We'll be under the squat rack. You guys have a good time at the cocktail party. Yeah.
That's why Kirk Ferentz is so tenured. I mean, here's the thing in this cauldron of like, oh, my coach just lost two straight games, fire him.
Yeah.
Why do you think he's been there forever? Because he doesn't deviate from who he is, Kirk Ferentz, and they don't. And that's what makes them fun to watch. And I think we know September Heisman's over. I forget who we handed the September Heisman to, maybe Corral or Bryce Young. But I'm telling you, like, this will be a good game for a guy like Jahan Dotson.
Yeah.
Who is as electric as any player in the country. Guys like Jahan Dotson, Bijan Robinson, who's got a big game against Oklahoma and Texas where game day will be this year. I've been to that game 7 times, and it's my favorite game in sports. Yeah. Right down the middle at the Cotton Bowl. You smell all the fried food next door at the State Fair. You're going to learn a lot about the Big.
I just want to finish real quick on the Big Ten, because CJ Stroud, you remember, he went out.
Yep.
Kyle McCord stepped in and won the freshman, Big Ten freshman of the week in the game that he didn't play in. And I think there were some murmurs locally about, wow, maybe this guy's the answer. And Stroud took some shots because they lost against Oregon. Meanwhile, he played great, right? I don't know what the issue was. But he played in Rutgers with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And he threw for 330, five touchdowns. You could say, well, it's Rutgers. Rutgers held Michigan pretty tight. Ohio State put 52-13. So a lot of people have kind of written off Ohio State as if, well, okay, they're not a factor. They lost to Oregon. I would just say be careful, because this is going to be an offense. I'd said this to Pollock on game day. You could say whatever you want about their issues on defense. This team's going to score 45 a game minimum every game. And Stroud is their guy. Trevion Henderson's a freak. They have the best trio receivers in the country. Don't write off Ohio State. Michigan. I can't wait to see Michigan go to Nebraska. They sent a loud message with an impressive win against Wisconsin. How about them? End of the third quarter, jump around. Michigan's right there. They probably built the entire week around. When they go to jump around, we're jumping with them. Let's go. We're doing this. I mean, they got a little bit of swagger, confidence. They just are believing. Aiden Hutchinson being back's right in the middle of that. It's fun to see that they're 5-0. And right now they're going to go to Nebraska, and you could say, well, Nebraska, Scott Frost, they're not any good. Careful. That's a team that I think's found an identity.
Belief.
It's a game. That's a tricky game for Michigan. I look forward to seeing how they play, but I thought they sent a message. Michigan State continues to I think prove a lot of people wrong. You could say, yeah, they're winning ugly early, just finding ways to win. But I think when you find ways to win games that maybe you didn't necessarily play great, you create a belief. And I think Mel Tucker right now, he's got a team that believes that they're a good football team. And they got some huge games coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks where we really find out if they're legit. But there's a lot of depth in the Big Ten, man. There's a lot of depth.
There's five teams in the top 11.
Think about that.
There's five of them.
I can't remember the last time Bear. Maybe we have to ask Bear that. I can't remember the Big Ten saying five in a top 11. I mean, five in a top 20, five in a top 15. That would be great. But five right now in the top 11. It has to do with teams like Michigan and Michigan State and Iowa getting up there, and not a lot of people expecting those three teams to get off to the kind of starts that they're off to.
Michigan's just quiet enough to be scary.
Yeah.
They just are. Like, we're used to all the off the field garbage with them, but they're with the coach. They're just quiet enough to say, "Hey, remember us? We do recruit five stars, but we recruit them differently. But we're still here."
Yeah, and I think anytime you're embarrassed and you have such pride, and they were all embarrassed after last year and the last couple years, they looked like. Remember that one year they were like the revenge tour. They had that one team. They had a good run. And it didn't quite. They weren't able to finish it. But this team kind of feels like they've got some angst against the world. You know, they're mad at the world after last year, and that's how they're playing. And we'll see if it keeps going. But Cade McNamara, and I was really happy to see him get a chance. Some more early down passing, hitting the shots vertically. They just looked like they've been running the football, and now they're showing they got balance. Now they're throwing it. I mean, you lose Ronnie Bell. I mean, that guy is a player. And the fact he's out, they've had to find different ways to attack people. Teams are going to be loading up against their run game, and Nebraska will be no different. They're going to put the game into the hands of Cade McNamara and those receivers and tight ends. And Michigan and Josh Gattis are like, okay, you're going to play us like that? McNamara is efficient. He's going to make throws. So – we'll see if he can do it this weekend. And you touched on the Big 12. What's your take on Oklahoma? They beat Kansas State. You and I talked about Rattler a week ago. You know, he played better. I thought he played great. But their defense, which I thought would be a real strength, continues to be somewhat surprising that they're not able to just shut people down.
I think the Big 12 is drunk. And I think that they – I mean, I just do. I know Oklahoma State's undefeated 5-0. They get Baylor at home in Stillwater. Still don't really know who Baylor is. We're hanging our hats on Oklahoma because they came in highly ranked Spencer Rattler, and we thought everybody was going to be good defensively. I've thought this since I looked at the schedule. I think Texas is is better. I just think Texas is better. I think they're going to have the best player on the field with Bijan Robinson. That offense loves that Steve Sarkisian is their head coach. Cade Thompson just runs the offense the way you want it. And Oklahoma, much like Clemson a week ago, who was the other team that got picked off a week ago, but they had been lit. Oklahoma's just living too dangerously. And I think that this weekend it's going to catch up with them because, yeah, they're good. They're 5-0. They've got a nice quarterback. They've got a nice offense. But I've yet to watch one of their games and say, wow. But I've done that with Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Texas, Casey Thompson taking over at quarterback.
Casey Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, I think it gives them a very, very different feel, obviously. And I talking to Sark last week, and we'll be down there this week, but he just said, you know, what he's figured out as a young guy in a new system is how much prep time you got to put in away from the facility. And he's starting to really do that. So it puts him in a spot to have answers. In Sark's system, he always has answers. You know, he did with Tua, he did with Mac Jones. He did it, you know, in the NFL when he was with the Falcons. Just always been that kind of guy with his system. And if you're a quarterback and you listen to what he says and you buy into processing, and the only way you can process quickly is to understand coverage and be able to come up with a counterpunch to whatever they do. And he seems like he's doing that. He didn't have a great game against TCU, but when Bijan Robinson's going to carry it 35 times over 200 yards, just kind of keep feeding the big fella and let him show that durability. This will be a heck of a showdown. It always brings out, like any great rivalry, this always brings out the best of the two teams. Oklahoma's concerns on defense, maybe they'll get exposed, but I think Alex Grinch and that defense will play their best game. There's going to be a ton of emotion on that field because of the buildup around this game year-round for these two teams. And now they get on the chance – Sark gets a chance to feel this for the first time. I think Casey Thompson's the key to the game because – if I'm Alex Grinch, what am I doing? There's no way that Bijan Robinson's going to carry it 35 times for 200 yards. We are stopping the run game. I don't care what we got to do. And that means Sark knows that. So that means they've got to come up with a way to attack within their pass game and put a lot on Thompson and his ability to create. How about this? His dad is Charles Thompson, who's one of the all-time greats to ever play in the Barry Switzer era as a quarterback. And you know, he's an OU guy. I mean, you know, Charles Thompson, here's his son now at Texas. So it's a heck of a story. He's the guy there. But outside OU in Texas, you talked about this, the Big 12, how do you figure it out? Mike Gundy is just like, hey, we're just going to win, right? You know, and maybe there are close games and maybe it's not been pretty, but guess what? We're 5-0. And Spencer Sanders has been around the block in the Big 12. They're finding some new skill. This Jalen Warren kid at running backs did a nice job. They've got some young receivers. They basically had to start over around Sanders at their skill spots. Great defense. Jim Knowles does, you know, the Big 12 gets knocked for defense, but they've got some pretty good defenses this year. Knowles and the Cowboys have a great defense. Texas Tech, I don't know, many people listening right now knew that Texas Tech is not just playing football this year, but playing well.
I mean, yeah, were they 4-1? Yeah.
They went over to Morgantown and won a close game, and they're sitting there at 4-1. So there are some good teams in this league as we get into, you know, the heart of the schedule, but it feels like Texas and OU winner will just be a notch above. And then Oklahoma State, that's kind of like where they like to be, forgotten, not respected. They're just going to have to continue to prove people wrong as they go through the rest of the schedule.
Yeah. And I love the Big 12 round robin situation that they have where everybody plays and the top two teams meet in the Big 12 championship, because, you know, you can say without any argument, well, they all played. It might be a dog eat dog situation some years where they all kill each other off, but yeah. Oklahoma State's going to get their chance. They get the bye week. They're going to sit at home, watch the Red River rivalry. One of those teams is going to win. If it's Texas, then they're the top team in the league. And then guess what? Oklahoma State the following week goes to Austin and gets Texas. And so then Oklahoma State's going to have the spotlight. And it really seems to be that way every year at the Big 12. It's Oklahoma. Texas is the brand, but they've been down. So you've got Oklahoma, and then you're always searching. Is it going to be Iowa State, who seems to – every year have these expectations and they're not live up to them. But by the way, Iowa State's the team you don't want to play if you're undefeated or you're playing really good football. You don't want to play them at the end of October, early November, because they'll get you.
They're definitely, just mark it down. They're gonna ruin somebody. Just done. That's that. It's just a matter of who they're gonna be. Who they're gonna
right.
be. You know, that's a given. Let's go to the SEC. We talked about Alabama and Georgia, you know, and their wins. I think the Kentucky story continues to be a great one. I just don't think people understand what Mark Stoops has done in Lexington. What is he in his ninth year, I think, in Lexington?
Yeah, we were talking about that over the weekend. He's been there for a while. And remember, he almost got fired after, year four, because everyone was freaking out?
Yeah, but what he's doing, like, other than maybe Bear Bryant, like, it's never been done there, ever, ever. You know, how his name, when these jobs open up, how he's not looked at as like a top tier. It's like, if a job opened up tomorrow right away, what are you going to hear? Oh, Luke Fickell, Matt Campbell. Like, and I get it. Those guys are
Billy Napier, all these. Yeah, Billy,
like, how in the world do people not look at what Mark Stoops has done with where he is? He lives in the SEC East. He's recruiting against the SEC East and he's competing every single year with the SEC East. And I mean,
it's just, don't, you know what it is? There's no, I'm not besmirching Mike Norvell here, but why Stoops didn't get the Florida State job with the connections he has to that program is beyond me. You know, you want to know why? Because a lot of these programs, Herb, they want sizzle. They want offense. They want flash. They want show. Well, Mark Stoops probably packs his own lunch to work and just goes and coaches. That's who he brings the last name, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, that's changed. I mean, if people who know football, I think when he initially came up in the coaching ranks, he was known, hey, yeah, there's another Stoops guy. And right. then he started to work at places like Miami of Florida. You know, he worked with Sean Taylor and Antrell Roll and some of those great Miami teams. And he went to Florida State with Jimbo and competed with some great teams and won a national championship there and that did amazing things. So he's, as a coordinator, he was exceptional. And then he goes to Lexington over the last 9 years. It's Lexington. Like, it's hard to win. The first time they beat Florida in Lexington since, was it the
86, 89, yeah, one of those that. 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we did backyard football and we were picking players, Florida and Kentucky, their whole team were out on the field and you and I were on the sideline and we were like, okay, I'll take him. I'll take him. I mean, you're picking a lot of Florida players as you're making some picks. Now, to their credit, they have recruited pretty well. I mean, they have been bringing in some players over the last 3 or 4 years that take them to a different level. But I'm saying in general, Florida and Kentucky, there's a different level there. So congratulations to the Wildcats. You know, we used to kid Kentucky kind of like you kid Duke or Kansas about, it's all right. Hey, Midnight Madness right around the corner.
It's October.
Yep, we're coming up, getting ready for hoops. Can't say that anymore. Big Blue Nation, they got a little bit more homework to do. I mean, it's not just about celebrating college basketball and what they may have on the hardwood. I mean, it's now, and they know this. You know, they've got to have a chance to celebrate what this football team is capable of doing. And here they are, 5-0, and playing a physical brand of football. So they're fun to watch. We know about Alabama, know about Georgia, Mississippi State. How about Will Rogers after that game? They knock off A&M at Kyle Field, and then he goes to the postgame presser and says, hey, listen, we've lost a few games by close margin, and basically we don't want our fans that don't want to cheer for us when we lose, don't cheer for us when we win.
Yeah.
I was proud of him for saying that in this era of, you know, you lose a game in the SEC, fire him. Auburn loses to Penn State, fire Derek Mason. Get rid of Bo Nix.
Yeah, betcha.
Mike Bobo's got to go. He's terrible. Like, we just got here. I just found my office around the – I mean, I just got here. You want me fired? I just got here. But that's the world, right, that we live in. And you win a game 1 week, you're the best, and then you lose a game the next week, and you need to be fired.
Yep.
So I love that Will Rogers – took to the mic to say, hey, man, don't cheer for us now that we wanted Kyle Field. We don't need that. Good for him.
Yeah. Are you with us or are you just here? Because if you're with us, we have some growing pains. If you're with us, be with us. If you're just here, then go away.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you.
By the way, there are two losses. They lost at Memphis by
which
two.
They got hosed.
Yeah. To me, you put an asterisk or a W on that one. And then they lose to LSU in a game where they fought back and just came up a little bit short last week. They lose by 3 points. I mean, those are their two losses. And fans are, you know, upset with them. You know, so I love that he did that.
That, do you know what that shows me? That shows me he's really a leader. Because, you know, in this day and age, to go out and say something like that, you have to be convicted in your beliefs of who you are for that locker room. And yep. I guarantee you, he had the respect of his teammates before and his head coach. But now when your quarterback goes out, there's like, you know, go tweet something or Snapchat something. We're going to be here next week.
And one last thing on the SEC before we move on. Auburn.
Bo Manziel.
I'm just saying Auburn, we just talked about how their fans can turn on you in a heartbeat. They lose to Penn State. They're basically outplayed much of the game by Georgia State at home.
Yep.
You got a first year head coach. You got Bo Nix, who's, you know, he's the guy, and he gets benched. They bring in TJ Finley, who to his credit brings them back. They end up winning that game. It was not pretty. And now you got to go on the road in a game where they haven't won. Speaking of the 80s, they haven't won there in forever. Mm-hmm. And they got to go to Baton Rouge. And who's he going to play? Is he going to go with Finley, who left LSU after spring ball, by the way, and play against his former teammates? And he just had the game where he brought him back. Do you go with Finley or do you go back to Bo Nix, who has 28 career starts and has been in every matchup you can imagine in the SEC? And how quick of a trigger do you have with him if he's erratic and you got a new system, his third system in three years as a starter? What do you do? And Brian Harsin goes with the latter. He goes with Bo Nix. And now you just sit back and wonder how Bo Nix will play in that game. And yeah, he had a Johnny Manziel moment, but I think more than anything, he didn't throw an interception. He scrambled around. I think he led him in rushing, which was big. And they just got it. They're sitting there at 4-1. And it feels like they're not 4-1, right? I mean, it doesn't feel like they're 4-1 after the way their first five of their games, 5 weeks of their season has gone. But I was proud of Bo and happy for Auburn to get that win.
Is there any player in the country that goes from what are you doing to elite in the matter of five snaps than Bo Nix? Because that kid, you'll watch the game because we had that on. It was our night game on ESPN. And you sit there, and I think that TJ Finley coming in was designed. I think they were going to put him in no matter what just to see if he gave him a little spark. But Bo was the guy all the way through. Bo will do things, and you're like, what in the hell was that? Five plays later, he has the highlight of the year. He's that player that just – he makes you as excited as he does frustrated because you know what's in there. I think his first game, didn't he lead the Auburn down to beat Oregon at AT&T Stadium and Justin Herbert? So he's got that in him.
Yep. That was his introduction as a starting quarterback where he completed maybe 40% of his passes. And then lo and behold, last drive, finds Seth Williams, beats Oregon on a big stage. And I think that's what drives coaches crazy is just play. Like, we love your creativity. We love the athletic ability to make plays, but man, please just let's play within the confines of the offense. And every once in a while, razzle dazzle's okay, but let's be more efficient. And I just did the Penn State game. That's all I heard from Bo and Mike Bobo and from Brian Harsin. Man, we're working on just more efficient, better decisions, more consistent. Here we go. That's who he is this year. That's who he's going to be. And he's still in the process of being that guy. He can't take away that razzle-dazzle element to his game. And this week it happened to have worked. And so we're all celebrating it. But that is a slippery slope. And hopefully he'll continue to try to be more consistent with his efficiency. And when he is, they're a tough team to beat. They get Georgia this week. Great rivalry game.
Oh, it's gonna be fun. Oldest rivalry in the South.
Yep.
And you, the game that I'll keep an eye on, Kentucky LSU. You want to talk about loud chatter? If Mark Stoops beats LSU to go to 6-0, and LSU falls to 3-3, 1-2 in the league, I would just stay off Baton Rouge local radio at that point, because this Max Johnson's really good. Boutte is one of the best receivers in the country. Stingley Jr., we know that the last team that I would want to play if I were LSU this week is Kentucky. Let's leave it. We'll leave it at that.
Other than Georgia or Alabama, you're probably right. And
yeah, LSU, because you see the UK on the helmets, you're like, we should smoke.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I can't, for whatever reason, I can't get 2020 out of my mind with LSU, and I have to give them credit because this team is fighting. This team, last year, you could not say that.
Right.
Last year, they had actual opt-outs that left the team. And then you had the players that remained felt like at times they opted out. You know, like it was just a weird year for them on the back end of the national title. They lost so much. And I got to give them credit. I wondered, because of last year, after they lost to UCLA, I thought, okay, they probably lost their fight for the year. Mm-hmm. And I think the addition of Max Johnson, he's brought a chip on his shoulder and he's a competitive guy. And I think it's impacted the entire team. I think they'll show up in the Kentucky game ready to fight and ready to play hard. I just wonder, like you're saying, they see Kentucky and they don't necessarily, as hard as you try to get them to respect 5-0 Kentucky, it's just the way the recruiting world works. LSU has all 5-stars and 4-stars. Kentucky doesn't. And so you try your best to get them to respect them. You coming off of a loss, you see if they will. But if they lose to Kentucky, Coach O is going to have his hands full. That's going to be tough.
So here we go. First weekend of October, and we had so much fun. We were turning the leaves. We're turning the calendar. We're turning everything. Then this next week, we had mentioned Iowa, Penn State's a good one. Look, BYU, Boise State could be entertaining. Georgia, Auburn, you just mentioned. So we got a lot to keep us entertained. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves, I'm going to rant for a second, when people say it's not a good slate. Well, then you don't like college. I will find the beauty in just about every game out there. This week, I love it just as much as I loved last week, because you've got the two teams that got beat down, Arkansas, Ole Miss, playing each other. Like, these are the games where if you love the sport, you see the beauty in these type of matchups.
Yeah, and for guys like you and I, it starts Thursday night. I mean, you got games on Thursday. We got games on Friday. And then you go into Saturday with OU Texas that is going to get a lot of attention. But you're right. You and I can get into Michigan State going to Rutgers, because Rutgers coming off a tough loss, and Michigan State's undefeated. Now they got to go on the road. Arkansas Ole Miss is going to be an intriguing game because they're both coming off humiliating losses. I mean, you can work your way all the way down and find – something at stake in a lot of these matchups. So no, it's another, it maybe doesn't have the big names like last week, but it definitely is, a fun game, fun week of games, headlined, of course, by what's going to go on at Iowa City with Penn State and Iowa. That is a major showdown, and hopefully it lives up to the hype.
Well, we hope we live up to our hype every Monday here on the podcast. We love doing this. We love breaking down the week before. We love looking a week ahead. And I can promise you this, we will have at least two games, Kirk, next Monday to discuss. There will be clarity in the Big Ten with Penn State, Iowa, who's that one team right now. And the Big 12, we will either sit here and be like, see, Oklahoma was just waiting for Texas, or we'll be saying, look out, Big 12, Sark's got his team.
It caught up to OU, and Sark's got a role. You know, it's one or the other. And if OU wins and looks good doing it, there's a new team to seriously consider as far as playoff contenders. Because right now, I think everyone's kind of like, I mean, I picked OU to win it all preseason, and right now I'm even like, but if they go and look really good, I think everyone else is going, there they are. There.
Yeah.
Like you said with Arizona State, it was almost like, there's the team that we thought we might see this year. OU, I mean, they're capable. They've got a great team. They just haven't been able to put it all together.
Don't beat yourself up about the Oklahoma pick. Everybody had Clemson back in the playoff too. So it's
I know.
But things are
they actually played a good BC team, and they're still not clicking. They were able to run. They had a back go over 100 yards. I mean, that's good.
That's it. And it wasn't Will Shipley, you know, right. Like, yeah. Man, Boston College, they had a chance to win that. I was watching. I thought Grossel was going to get it done and fumbled it. I mean, yeah, you're right. Clemson got the win, but BC will probably look back at that and be like, damn, we had a chance to go into Death Valley and get the win. So now the week in the books, on to week 6. Cannot wait to break it down with you. As always, we appreciate whatever method you use to listen to this podcast. For Kirk Herbstreit, I'm Matt Berry. We'll catch up with you next week after week 6 here on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.